You're listening to Scion Radio at that special time whenever you happen to download or listen to American Cousins. It is 10 to 4 on the 11th of February. In the United Kingdom, it's freezing cold. We have had the coldest night in the UK for 25 years. In Braemar, it was minus 25. Here in Lincolnshire, around about minus 6. Let's see if we can warm ourselves up with some West Coast sunshine and open the doors and let that warm air in, which is preceded by the loveliness that is Bruce K. Rosenbloom. Are you there?
I am, and I have to tell you, I'm ashamed to say that it's actually quite cold here as well, Andrew.
Define quite cold in your terms.
Well, I know for you, it's in Fahrenheit, it's probably under freezing, and you have snow, which we're very jealous of, because we love to play in the snow when it happens once every 25 years here. So, but right now we're sitting at 45 degrees Fahrenheit, up from the low 30s, and we're expecting some days of rain and it's probably a typical English day here.
Yep. That's good.
Overcast, foggy, overcast, rainy. 50s and 60s, but right now it's in the 40s. So
as I came upstairs to the back office Armageddon studio, I looked at the temperature. It's now coming up to 4 o'clock. It's hovering around freezing again. It's very interesting when it goes to minus naught, because I never thought you could have a minus naught. I thought naught was naught. But anyway, we digress.
It's go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. Don't worry. Let's talk about the thing that we're seeing on our screens a huge amount over the last 48 hours. And we really don't want to sort of dwell on it too long, but the impeachment thing is going on at the moment.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's a big distraction again. But I have to say, before we go into that, just to finish up on that weather thing, you sent me some pictures of the snowfall in your backyard, and I tell you, the grass always looks greener on the other side, because I know that when you look at our weather and you see the sunshine and the swimming pool and all that, it looks great. When I see the snow covered grass and the beautiful hills and foliage behind where you are, I mean, it makes us want to be there. So
just the thing I hate about it, if we're going to I like, you like, I hate, you hate.
Yeah, well,
I hate
shoveling
the
snow,
slushy
but I
bit.
Give anything
no, no, no.
to have a chance to do it,
We never have enough to shovel. No, it's when it goes slushy and horrible and everything just clags up. That's the bit I hate, and I'm not looking forward to that. Ketley has told us from Monday or Tuesday onwards it's going to warm up. Meanwhile, back in the world of
Ketley, huh?
Sir John Ketley, absolutely, we believe every word cascades from his lips. Meanwhile, as I say, we are seeing some really quite extraordinary stuff coming out. The reason I say that is that we're beginning to see some footage of that incredible moment when they broke in to Parliament, to your Parliament, from different cameras that we've not seen before. How's this all playing out for you?
Well, I have to tell you, the Democrats have been getting rave reviews for their handling of the impeachment so far. The Democratic managers have been buttoned up. They're building a very methodical case, and a lot different than the first impeachment trial, where they got criticized, but they were hamstrung by not being able to bring witnesses and things like that into the trial. But this is much different. I mean, this is what you're really seeing them. They are presenting a case that they're showing how it played out in real time, because they have his tweets, they have his taped interviews on television and radio, and they have video footage that were taken by cell phone, by people with cell phones that they have, and plus the internal security in the Capitol. So you take all that footage and you juxtapose it next to the next to his tweets and next to his speeches and his rhetoric. You have a timeline for something that was building for quite a while. And they're really proving that he was the mastermind, that he orchestrated this, because he couldn't accept losing an election and didn't want to give up power. And that's really what it's all about. And when you make it personal, and when you show the new footage that showed how close these insurrectionists were to members of Congress, both the Senate and the House, and the things that they were saying they wanted to do to these people, it's unbelievable. I mean, they showed a video of Mitt Romney, the senator from Utah, and he was trying to leave the Capitol and walk down the steps towards the first floor when a Capitol officer came running at him and said, no, turn around, go the other way. And you could see Romney panic and run and follow this officer. I mean, these people were you know, steps away from possibly being caught and captured and killed by these people who a lot of these people, now that, you know, they've been arrested and have been making statements, said that their intent was to capture and kill Nancy Pelosi, to capture and kill Mike Pence, and probably anybody else that got in their way if they'd have recognized these people. You know, and one, you know, and the question is, how many people had to die and who had to die before, you know, some of these senators will actually, you know, put country and put what's the good for the country ahead of their own personal political ambitions, because that's what they're doing. I mean, it's almost, they're saying, you know, despite how great the case was by the Democratic managers, and they finish up their testimony this morning and then they turn it over to the president's defense team. And we'll talk about them in a second, because they were horrible. And it was pathetic, the arguments that they presented. But, the question becomes, they're saying, well, if you put all these people in a room with a secret ballot, it would be 100-0. He'd be convicted. But because a lot of these guys are afraid of his base and afraid of retribution by Trump, you know, they're going to find reasons to call this unconstitutional. They're going to say, oh, well, the videos are offensive and there's nothing new here. And it's, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is, the case is compelling. What happened at the Capitol is compelling. It's emotional. It's gut wrenching. Five people died. I mean, yeah. 140 Capitol police officers were maimed, you know, injured. One officer had his eye put out. Another one, they had heart attacks. They had broken bones. They were beaten and stabbed with flagpoles with American flags on them. I mean, it's outrageous what went on. And for people in this country to sit back and allow him to be, you know, to get away with this again, I mean, it's a sad commentary. I mean, more people voted to get him out of office. You would think that more people would want these senators to do the right thing in their cities. I think if you do the right thing in your city, the base that wants, you know, a democracy and wants, you know, to restore things back to the way they were before Trump would reelect some of these guys. You don't need Trump's deplorable base to do that. And it remains to be seen how this will play out. But Trump's defense team was ill-prepared. They were rambling. They made no sense. They have no real argument to defend what he did, because everything that you're seeing on the Democratic side, again, has been played out in real time over a period of time. They've established how this was all orchestrated and planned for months. And when Trump started saying the only way he could lose is if it was a rigged election, and he would go to rally after rally and rile up his base and get them angry. And he called for them to be there on January 6th. He called specifically for them to be there because he set the time for his rally to start at a certain time and end at a certain time. So when they marched over to the Capitol, it was at the beginning of the vote counting process when they were certifying the electoral votes. And so he knew exactly what he was doing and how he was manipulating these people. And it's really unbelievable. So it's hard to combat that with the old, you know, oh, it's he's got freedom of speech under the First Amendment thing. You know, yeah, to an extent. But when you show how he orchestrated this and he plotted this out and he used his base and he used these people to do his dirty work, it's striking. Now, could we be surprised, and could this be turning some people around and, you know, and making them really, you know, because they've made it so personal, are their consciences, you know, conscience bothering them? You know, we'll soon see. You know, we know that at least seven are going to side with the Democrats. We need another 10. It's very possible that, when they bring this to fruition on the Democratic side, the case will be overwhelmingly compelling to convict him. And I don't know how the Republicans, you know, save him again. But if they do, it's just another, you know, he gets another free pass. I mean, and that's just the story of his life.
But looking at the way this is panning out, it's got another 2 days or so to go. They reckon, well, they were talking sometimes Saturday, Sunday, or maybe Monday. Once that's been done, is that the point at which we can sort of take the foot off the gas, which is firing the engine that is the post-President Trump rumble and actually now concentrate on where we're actually going to go in a minute, talking about jabs and Super Bowl and life as it's returning to as normal as you can at the moment. Is it, when this is finished, will that be it for President Trump?
Well, I think that, like what happened after the last impeachment when he was acquitted, I think it only emboldens and empowers him to do more. I just think that it's unfortunate because they really have a chance to kind of purge him from the Republican Party and make him a non-issue by convicting him and not allowing him to run again. But if you acquit, it fires him up again, and who knows what future damage he can do. I think these Republicans need to grow a spine and really vote conscience versus their own political career. I say you vote the way you should vote, and let the chips fall where they may when you're up for the next election. And that's the way it should be. But if that works out that way, who knows? They're saying, most likely not. But that's not the end of Trump, but it'll be the end of this distraction, and hopefully Biden can get on with his administration and start getting things done to bring the economy back, get kids back in school, and get people injected and begin this whole herd immunity process so we can get back to life as we knew it with some exceptions. Same way we got back to normal after 9/11 20 years ago, we got back to normal with a new normal. We were normal, but we were a new normal because now just going through security checks and things like that is commonplace. Yep. So wearing masks and things like that will be commonplace, but hopefully we'll be able to get back, be social, get our kids back in school, and start solving the economic and education problems and the infrastructure problems and the international problems that we need to address in this country and around the world.
Okay, in the first 100 days. No, we're not going to go there. But we are going to talk jabs in a minute, because you're about to go off for your second one as you put your microphone away. But let's talk about the Super Bowl, because that was a sort of David Goliath, wasn't it? And Tom Brady, the veteran, was up there against the youngster. How did that all pan out? Because we didn't see that over here.
Yeah, the nice thing is, you know American football because the NFL plays games in London every year.
Indeed, at Wembley, I think.
Yeah, and they play, and so a lot of your countrymen should be acclimated to the American style football.
Indeed.
But it's a big deal here, and they play a 17 game season or 16 game season, followed by 2 or 3 weeks of playoffs, and then the two best teams that emerge play in what they call the Super Bowl. And it's a big hype day. It's like a national holiday almost. That every it gets very high viewership on television, and advertisements go for millions of dollars per spot. And these companies always create these really unique, fun, and emotional commercials because they know they're going to get lots of eyeballs. The commercials were so-so this year. The game wasn't. The interesting thing was they filled the stadium with cutout people and allowed 25,000 in. They were all healthcare workers and frontline heroes.
Oh, fantastic.
And family members, of course, from the players. So there's about 25,000. They were all clustered in different locations around the stadium. They had to wear masks. And it was, it was kind of, they tried to make it business as usual. I don't think CBS did a great job on it. I think the halftime show, which was The Weeknd, the rapper.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. He was okay. It was kind of an interesting show. I didn't quite understand the visuals of it. I actually
it's your age, Bruce. It's your age, I think.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not, because I enjoyed the music. I mean, as a matter of fact, Andrew, when you come out here next time, The Weeknd lives right up the street from us. He lives. He's a neighbor of Len and Germain, who you met.
We'll have to get him on the program.
Well, I wish we could, but the Weeknd lives literally walking distance from here, but inside a very gated community, which.
But they know who you are, Bruce, surely.
But we'll get inside, and I'll show you his $25 million spread inside this place, which is unbelievable. It's really unbelievable. But anywho, they go back. I mean, so the halftime show was okay, but the game was touted as, it was really hyped. It was the Tom Brady, who's won 6 previous Super Bowls, more than most teams combined over the years. He is they call him the GOAT, the greatest of all time. 19 years, he's 43 years old, leading the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and going against Patrick Mahomes, who's this rising star out of Texas Tech University, who won the Super Bowl with the Kansas City Chiefs last year. So it was the defending Super Bowl champs and the rising star against the cagey veteran. And the cagey veteran, just they destroyed the Chiefs. It was 31-9, I think, the final score.
Oh, my goodness.
Tom Brady was brilliant. He won his seventh Super Bowl. Just absolutely amazing. The game was a great game if you liked watching one team really just dominate the other team. But there's a backstory to it, which casts a pall over the whole thing, which wasn't really talked about much. But Andy Reid, who is the coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, his son, Britt Reid, works on his staff. Now, Andy had two sons. One, many years ago, died from a drug overdose and was always in trouble with the law. And Britt kind of followed that same pattern. But Andy's kind of kept an eye on him and has had him as an assistant coach on the various teams he's been with. And so that's the case with the Kansas City Chiefs. Britt's on staff there. And it's probably just so Andy can keep an eye on him. But Britt has a drinking problem. And he's had a drug problem. And he's had bouts, with the law for, possession of a firearm and things like that. So he has a police record. And yet he's the linebackers coach. That's a position on the football team. He's got a big job, and he's not really qualified for it, but he's the coach's son. And apparently he had been drinking at the Chiefs facility on Thursday before Super Bowl, and then got in his car, his SUV, and was involved in a multi-car accident which left two young children fighting for their lives.
Okay.
And so it's being investigated now, but it doesn't look good for Britt Reid. He's going to be charged for something and will probably end up spending time in jail, most likely. And it's a horrible story. And the Chiefs, if it's true that he was drinking on their premises, then they will be held liable for whatever happens. And it's going to be something that will probably get settled out of court. You'll never hear about the true dollar amount that's settled upon. And hopefully these two children survive. One they said was improving. The other one they said was still faced life-threatening injuries. So there's been – for a guy who had two sons, both have kind of gone down the wrong path in life. One died and the other one, always in trouble. Now, that's got to weigh heavily on the coach. How do you coach the biggest game of your career when you have this cloud hanging over you? And if the coach is under that kind of a cloud, that it kind of hangs over the rest of the team. So whether they were really fired up to play in this game because of that, who knows? They were also missing a couple of their best players due to injury. And then their quarterback really wasn't all healthy. Mahomes had a foot injury that, he said, didn't bother him, but he probably played the worst game of his young career in the NFL. So, did those things kind of play into the Tampa Bay's win? Maybe not, because Tampa Bay played a flawless game. They were so dominant and so powerful. But you have to wonder, something like this, which is just a terrible, terrible situation. You just wonder how much that kind of played a role in their lackluster performance. So,
which is a bit sad, because really, in some senses, the whole country needed a big lift, and Super Bowl can quite often give that sort of thing, can't it?
Mm-hmm. But I think, the fact that Tom Brady won his seventh, that was kind of the talk of it.
Yeah.
Again, all the other stuff, some of the commentators on ESPN, after the game was over, when they did their post-analysis, were saying, nobody would ever say this, and the coaches, nobody would ever admit it. But they were all kind of like, kind of winking and saying, this situation had to have had some bearing on it. But take that, putting that aside, Brady played at 43, looked like, he was an 18-year-old kid playing. He was having fun. The team was dominant. The Tampa Bay has a player named Rob Gronkowski, who played with Tom Brady on four Super Bowl teams with the New England Patriots. He came out of retirement to play with Brady this year, and they hooked up for two touchdowns. And these two guys could have their own American Cousins show. They're that funny, and that good. Although we couldn't afford them.
I was going to say, you know, we've already got this hit list. We've got Mr. First, second person in the country, your poet, Amanda Gorman, and now the rapper up the road from you. This could be quite a show if we ever manage to put it together. We've got to be careful of the time, because you and Jackie, this is our next subject, you're just about to go and get your second jab. So you'll be then free to go, footloose and fancy free, or perhaps not, actually. But at least you'll have your second jab. That's coming up soon.
Yeah, it's coming up. Right, we're going to head over to Cal State Northridge, where our vaccination center is, the university, and we'll hopefully it'll be as easy as it was the last time. We have priority because we're a second shot. Apparently, they've put some of the first shot people on hold. There's some issues with availability of vaccines and things, but you know, hopefully that's getting fixed in LA County, and it'll expand soon. But we are have an appointment for 10 o'clock this morning. We're going to go a little early. Hopefully we'll get in and out like last time, and hopefully we'll feel, you know, no effects like we did the first time. Although hearing a lot of stories from people who have had the Pfizer shot and the Moderna shot, and who are of various ages and have had various conditions. So it's kind of, you know, what will happen to us afterwards is kind of an unknown right now. We know people in our age group who've had the second Pfizer shot who said that they had no after effects at all. Maybe they felt a little flush, but just for a little bit, and then they felt fine. My daughter-in-law, who had the first Moderna shot and then showed symptoms and had battled COVID for 2 weeks, Samantha, who you met, a week after she was tested negative after battling COVID, had her second Moderna shot, and about 12 hours later had after effects that just knocked her out for almost 2 days. Chills, fever, nausea, being tired. It really knocked her for a loop. But, you know, after the second day, she's perfectly fine now, and she's feeling great. So, you know, they're saying that some of the doctors are saying, well, if you've had COVID, you're more likely to have, you know, more, you know, severe after effects than if you didn't. And they're saying that younger people versus older people tend to have more side effects from the second shot than older people. So I'm just hoping that I get it. I'm hoping for the best, but preparing for the worst.
Preparing for the worst. Yep.
And I'll keep you informed as to where
we
are.
I'm sure you will. So if there's a hole in the output this time next week, we'll know that you have been succumbed to something. But we're not going to do any names, any pack drills. But it's interesting that in the UK, they're rolling the vaccine out. And the Pfizer one, they're tending to do one dose for as many people as they can, and then the second dose in 12 weeks, not as quickly as yours. No names, no pack drill. We can't mention them because it would look a bit odd. But I was talking just a few hours ago to a very good close friend of ours, and indeed the programme. And he was called by his local authority last night at very short notice to say, do you want to come and have your jab? And the reason for that is that with all the jab, the one particularly that is temperature sensitive, they don't want it to go to waste. So it's great to see that the system, after they'd done all the ones during the day that they thought they should get through, were then very quick off the mark to make sure that they could use up what they got left that was spare. So it's really good to see that, certainly in the UK, and I'm sure this is true across the world, that they are taking the greatest of care of what is a very, very slim resource. I mean, they're manufacturing in its millions and millions of doses, but there are trillions and trillions of people who need it.
Yes. And I guess we have, you know, Moderna and Pfizer are getting the most press, but, you know, we've heard a lot of things about AstraZeneca, which I think was developed in England, right?
In the UK, yes, absolutely.
That's one with that was in with Oxford University.
Yeah,
so I guess that's been getting some really good reviews. The Johnson & Johnson single shot here has been getting some positive press. And I think it's important that they roll out all these vaccines, because these different strains that are coming from the UK and South Africa and different places are starting to hit all across the world. I mean, we're you know, they're saying that it's going to get – that we're really going to start feeling the effects of these new strains over the next couple of months, and we're not really out of the woods yet. So, but they say that if you know, that some of these new strains, the effectiveness is less than the percentages are a little lower than the original strain. But, you know, getting the vaccine is better than not getting the vaccine, because I'd rather have something fighting at 75% over a stronger strain than no percent, you know. So hopefully all these different we have some friends that live in a different part of England than you, and they put on Facebook that they got their AstraZeneca shot up there. So I guess you guys are moving forward with that one up there. But, you know, hopefully we'll get these shots out. People will get stuck. We'll get this herd immunity thing going, and we'll start to build back, you know, a more normal world where we can start socializing and seeing people in person and eating in restaurants instead of outside of restaurants, and getting kids back in the classroom instead of being on Zoom.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, so we'll do that. We'll just keep monitoring it over the next couple of weeks and months and see where we go, Andrew.
Well, just before you go, I know that you and Jackie have had an interesting up and down week, and you had to say goodbye to a very good friend of yours, haven't you?
Our family dog, who is, I should say our family, because when you have this little thing. Actually, 110-pound thing.
You know, I was going to say, not all that little.
Yeah, that loves you unconditionally, is there for you unconditionally, follows you around the house when you're alone, and sleeps under your desk when you're doing the American Cousins show. Gets up, you know, when you get up in the morning and say you want to eat, and you hear the little paws, you know, tick, 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 tick down the hallway right to the bowl where she gets her food. We had Brooklyn, we had a brother and sister pair that we acquired 7 years ago as pups, and we named them Brooklyn and Dodger.
Wonderful names.
Yeah, the Dodgers being the Dodgers, and having come from Brooklyn, the male was Brooklyn. The male was the male was Dodger Dog after the Dodger Dog hot dogs, and Brooklyn was Brooklyn Bridget after the Brooklyn Bridge. And they were wonderful dogs, wonderful family members. And then the Dodger passed away a year ago from, he had a tumor, a bone cancer tumor on his leg that just incapacitated him. And you know, it was hard to watch him. The quality of life, you know, had left. It was just sad. So, you know, the nice thing is that when you help relieve their pain, it's such an easy, peaceful process.
Absolutely.
And the same happened with Brooklyn. These larger breed dogs tend to get these tumors, and she got the same tumor that Dodger had, but it was up in her right shoulder in the joint, you know, pressing against her lung. So her breathing got bad, and she couldn't walk. And there was not much we could do but give her the best quality of life we could. And it just got to the point the other morning where she couldn't even get up and walk. So we had to do what we felt was right. And, you know, we had a good cry. There's a void, clearly a void in the house. So it's just me and Jackie looking at each other every morning. And now I'm the lap dog because, you know, it's like, oh, get me this. Can you make me coffee? And can you do this? Yeah. And then when she's reading the paper, I just kind of lay on the floor next to her feet, you know. Which I've been doing for 42 years anyway. So
you're painting a wonderful picture. Well, I'm sure everybody.
Anyway, so we're, you know, it's we've gotten some really lovely notes from people, and it's tough, you know, and you know, hopefully, you know, the pain lasts for just a little while, and then, you know, like they say. You know, time heals all wounds, and I'm sure, you know, we'll be fine, but it's tough to lose a family member with.
Well, I know that everybody will be thinking of you. Thank you very much indeed for sharing that. Yeah. And it's time for you to get yourself in the car, get yourself with masks and gloves and all those other bits and pieces, and get off to your locale to have number two. I'm internally jealous because I have the only thing I got through from my medical people this week, and this is going to really put a kibosh on everything, is that every 2 years we have to be tested in the UK for bowel cancer, and we have to use a little process that you have to. I'm not going to go into it. People in the UK know it's great every 2 years that they do the test, but that's the most glamorous medical thing that I've had come through the door this week.
You know, let's do a little public service announcement here. You know what? You know, it's kind of it's kind of stuff you don't really want to talk about.
Nope.
But it's good to talk about it. It's like prostate cancer or breast cancer, or ovarian cancer, colon cancer. I mean, those are silent killers.
Absolutely.
If you don't get tested when you start to reach certain ages, you know, the last thing you want to do is have it creep up on you and be surprised by it. And if you can go get tested, and it's no big deal, You know, and if you can talk about it and kind of, you know, self-deprecate a little bit about it, it's okay, you know, because you'd rather catch it in the earlier stages where most things can be treated, most things, not all things, but most things can be treated so you can have a better quality of life. I mean, why wouldn't you do it? You know,
absolutely.
Why wouldn't you do it? And so I say, you know, and it's great to see, you know, high profile people come out and say, hey, I had this, I went and did it. I recommend you do it. And it works. And I think the more you talk about it and the more you make it, you put it out there, you know, the easier it is. You know, it's so funny. I go to lunches sometimes and two or three guys will all talk and we all find out that we had to get, you know, our prostates checked and we had prostate surgeries. And it becomes, you know, a hysterical laughing lunch because, you know, hearing these stories, I mean, you know, it's not the most pleasant thing in the world,
but when
you're talking with other people who've been through it and they know, it's kind of like an inside joke. You know, the people that haven't gone through it kind of like, well, what's so funny? Or what, you know, let us in on the joke. But, you know, so, you know, when you can talk about it openly, I think it puts people at ease and it makes it a little less tough for them to go through the process. So,
of course, when you need somebody high profile to talk about something like this, there is no better person qualified being a high profile person than your very good self, Bruce K. Rosenbloom.
Because of the celebrity that I am in Lincoln, right?
Thank you so much.
People here don't realize how important and famous I am in another part of the world, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You take care. Hope it all goes well. And hopefully we'll be chatting to you this time next week for another edition of American Cousins.
Absolutely. And everybody stay safe up in Lincoln. So love you all. Take care.